Hi everyone, this is Valley Nordic. I'm Chander in Palo Alto.
And this is Arne in Oslo, Norway.
Welcome back to the old listeners and welcome to the new listeners. Valley Nordic is a podcast about business, culture, and technology from Nordic and Silicon Valley perspectives, done by an entrepreneur and a venture capitalist. And today's topic is more of a box-free discussion, which Arne doesn't like. If you've been listening to us, it's Arne likes boxes and I don't like boxes. So sometimes we have box-free discussions. And today's box-free topic is let's call it China crackdown on tech, mainly on tech. So we'll talk what has happened, why it's happening, and what do we see next? Like, is it temporary, permanent? How and do we expect similar things happening in Europe, US in future? And before we start, we missed last week because Arne had to take an urgent holiday to go to Tuscany in Italy. And he has come back with I don't know how much you brought back, but he had a lot of wine and gelato in Italy.
Yeah, and urgency for the urge of wine and gelato.
Yeah. And the trip was fine? You felt safe?
I felt safe. Yes, absolutely. Now I'm in holding quarantine in Norway, waiting to test again so that I can move about freely like before.
Yeah, good. So let's talk about China, or China crackdown. So what has happened in the last maybe 6 months or so? I think it first made waves with the cancellation of Ant Financial IPO, which we covered as a podcast episode.
We kind of covered the prospective IPO.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. Like the week they were going to go IPO, or the week before, and then 2 days before, the regulators stopped the IPO. Ant Financial is a big fintech company in China, I think one third owned by Alibaba. So that's where it made big waves, and Jack Ma had to apologize, and a lot of the other tech leaders went and apologized. Pinduoduo's CEO resigned, and Tencent CEO, met with regulators and promised to do the right thing, et cetera, et cetera. So that's when it started, and people thought, oh, okay, that, it's one off. They didn't follow, or it was Jack Ma problem. Like, he was the one who criticized government openly. So maybe reaction to that. But then Didi, which is like Uber of China, listed in the US, another IPO, and the authorities kind of told them to remove their app from the app store. So that stock went down. And I think, Arne, you know how much valuation they lost and what was the market cap?
Yeah, so Didi listed in New York on June the 30th, and they raised in that process $4.4 billion and hit the market at a market cap of $68 billion. And once this news hit the wire, the company lost $24 billion in value.
So go through the waves. Then the latest wave is the tutoring companies. So in China, how the culture is. Most or a lot of students take tutoring off after school tutoring services, and which are getting expensive, and now there are apps and online courses. So this happened maybe 2-3 weeks ago, where the government came out and said that these companies should be nonprofit, like convert to nonprofit, and impose fee standards, meaning they can't charge a lot of money, they can't raise capital, and they can't have foreign ownership. So that tanked the shares of New Oriental Education and Technology, which is a big, let's call it ed tech company, and then TAL Education Group, which is another ed tech company. And in parallel, in parallel, there was a crackdown on online gambling. I don't know the timing, but it was happening either 6 months ago or even before that. So these, like the regulation has come in waves, targeting different sectors within tech. And we can now get into why they're doing it, or at least publicly what they're saying.
A few points to supplement. I think you covered all the main bases.
But I was going to ask next, Arne, what would you like to ask?
Yeah, I thought you were jumping on to our next section. Yeah. Well, there are a couple of additional comments on the edtech side. There's a company called Gaotu Tech Edu, which has like a very well known founder apparently in China called Larry Chen. That company went from a big valuation to almost nothing. So it lost 93% of its value. And essentially the founder here lost $14 billion. So that's a pretty big loss. The one additional, let's call it segment, is cryptocurrency. There's been a big crackdown on mining of cryptocurrency, which has been a very big, Chinese miners, essentially, crypto miners, have been a very big part of the market. And in April, the Chinese cracked down on that. So a lot of those have either been out of business or have moved to other locations, and is one of the underpinning reasons why Bitcoin fell after its peak in April. So the crypto side of things is actually a pretty big part of it. And there's also in China, there's a company called Weibo, which is kind of like a short messaging service similar to Twitter, but it's sort of the main service for that in China. There's a story of that going from being a listed company to a buyout into a private company where a large state entity is one of the main funding sources for that.
Oh, wow. Yeah, crypto, I totally forgot. I see that as a parallel world. I was, you know, somehow only focused on the, let's say, fiat world of currency and markets. But that's... Thanks for adding that, Arne. So this, a lot of this has happened, and now we can get into why it's happening. I think some of it is justified and some of it is, you know, debatable. So the agency that's leading it is Ministry of Industry and Information Technology, MIIT. And the reasons they gave were this disrupting market order. That's one reason. The companies which are doing that, then companies which are infringing on users' rights, and also companies which are mishandling user data. And I think the EdTech was more kind of like providing equal opportunity of education or tutoring to people who don't have enough money to afford these things. So lower the price for more, you know, equitable education in China. And I think crypto has another reason, because that basically threatens the fiat order or control of currency in China. If I don't think it'll ever become like a Chinese currency, but it was, I don't know if it had anything to do with energy, but avoiding that threat of having the biggest currency being mined in China, which kind of may compete in future with Chinese yuan, might have been the reason. We don't know. That's why it's unboxed episode. What do you think, Arne? Outside of this, what are the other reasons you could think of why this is happening?
Well, so I think you can say that a little bit of it is warranted, but I think the vast majority of it is not warranted. That is not to say that there's not misbehavior in tech, in the use of users' data or fraud or these sorts of things, but I see it as a very concerted and multifaceted approach by the Chinese Communist Party for control, and control in multiple ways. One is that some of the tech entrepreneurs that has become billionaires have been powerful people with influence and following. The Communist Party does not like that. They don't like to or being in a competitive situation. The Chinese Communist Party likes a more monopoly on power. Mm-hmm. Secondarily, a number of the tech companies have information channels, and there is clearly a desire to have full control over information flow in the country. I think the government or the party does not like, they want to take back the market share in financial markets, essentially. They do not fundamentally like the trend of Chinese company listing in the West, particularly in the US, and have capital inflow and losing market share. So it's a power play to get companies to play according to their rules and list in China and make it a more Chinese economy. And finally, there is a part of that that also goes to the fact that there are new laws in the US. If you're going to be listed in the US, you have to submit to audits. And there's been a very reluctance to allow Chinese companies to be audited by the West, and particularly if that relates to user data.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's completely an unwarranted power play by a dictatorship.
Mm. So, I mean, there may be elements of that. You're right. They don't want their data to be, or data on Chinese people to be read or being available to any foreign power, especially US, which is their major competitor. So there are even calls in the US to delist the Chinese company. And China is saying they want the financial or the capital to come from China for these companies. So there may be reasons, like they want the Chinese economy to benefit from the tech wave. But I think a lot of it is just protecting the data of their citizens.
But you can also view that as, we want investment, but we don't like to pay returns.
That's funny. But they, I think,
but like, it's true.
But in, like, they just allowed, I think JP Morgan opened their first office in China. Goldman has big presence in China. So there is financial, they're opening up finances. But when it comes to, it may be, you know, them keeping control of the data, that may be a reason. But they can, you know, reprimand this, the CEOs, like they did with Jack Ma. Why go down this path of, you know, you can't, like with Ant, I think some of the practices they had were not good for their citizens or users. Like, people didn't know how much interest rates they were paying. There were a lot of personal loans, and Ant was not liable. It was basically, they were making the money, but the risk was all on banks' balance sheet. So US had this, you know, consumer protection agency. I forget the exact name. Some agency that protects consumer to do that. We didn't used to have that. So it may be something similar. So it's a mix of the party wanting power or wanting control and like some level of protection for citizens. So I can see, like, for education, like, I can see the rationale. Okay, you know, you can't charge that much money, then only the rich people can get tutoring and only they can go to good school. So the poor are always, you know, left behind. But the other side of the argument is, if you make them nonprofits, then the best people won't go into that field, then there will be no innovation and you won't be, there won't be benefits of this tutoring. It won't be a market.
I think it's too simplified to say it's protection for the citizens of China. I think there's definitely a power play here. I think China's been through, you know, been through a period, particularly under Deng Xiaoping, of liberalization, and particularly on in the economic sense. Mm-hmm. But I think also the last, I don't know how many years, but since Xi Jinping took over, it's been a reversal where reversing the liberalization of the economy, crackdown on free speech, crackdown on control, and everything. And I think it's a continuation. And I think the control includes economic control.
Yeah. So, like, I'm agreeing with you. That is part of the reason. But other part is some level of protection for consumers. So it's not just solely that. Because if you, like, a lot of the stuff they're doing makes sense. You know, like, Alibaba and Tencent, they didn't allow the links to work to other services on their platform. Now they opened up. So now you can, you know, any content things you have on these platforms, the links work. And similarly, on the education side, if they want to make sure people who don't have money get access to the best education or services as well.
So I see what you're saying, and but the way that I would view that is that there are fringe benefits to government overplaying power. Mm-hmm. So there are positive, as a consumer, there are positive elements, effects of it, even if that's not the driving force.
Yeah, so you are saying the main reason they're doing it, you know, to keep control.
Absolutely.
And any consumer benefit is just a side effect.
Yeah, or part of making it a digestible package.
But digestible to who?
Consumers.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's more nuanced than that. It's a mix of both. I'm not saying one is causing other, because, you know, they have kind of absolute authority. They can do, ask companies to do whatever they want. But I, at least, who knows, you know, we are both not there. What I read and hear from people who are there, they're liking this crackdown, which it maybe that's how it's spinned, who knows, but a government trying to make things like education more equitable, protecting data, making markets more open. So you, if you have like dominant position, you can't control access to customers. All these are good market economic things, or good governance things.
I would agree with that, but shooting a company a day after the IPO is not good governance.
Yeah, or
actually, it was not the day after. It was the 2 days after, because the day after was the 100-year anniversary of the Chinese Communist Party. So they held peace for 1 day while they were celebrating, and then they shot them.
Yeah, I was going to say that might have been the wrong timing, or the one of the stories is that they didn't want anything else to get attention during that time. So this was the wrong time, but who knows, it kind of sounds silly, but who knows, that's the reason, but yeah. So what happens, so what's happening in China? How do you see, you can say they're taking the lead in regulating tech companies, because that effort is happening in our countries too. In the US, in Europe, governments are trying tech regulation. So you see anything, like you see them as taking the lead, or what is the effect on what's happening in the US?
Well, I think it's a difference between regulating and neutering. So I think this is a government power play and not regulation. So I think there's a big difference between what's going on in the US and Europe, and I'm not pretending that either of them are perfect. Mm-hmm. But I think this is going to have a cooling effect. I think the one thing I think is that the Western IPO of Chinese companies is dead. And that has been a very strange construct in the first place, because it's actually not the company listing as such. It's I forget the name of it, but it's called ADR, which is essentially it's sort of a right. So what's listed is actually kind of a right to the returns of a share. So these IPOs are actually not full shares in the companies. American depository receipt. So there's been sort of a structuring of an asset to make it available to a market where it cannot trade. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was a construct that was a bit weaker than what it was intended to be. And I think that weakness is showing, and I don't see that that will fly anymore. Now, of course, the question is what happens to those companies that have already been through that and has been listed. And I think that clearly they will either delist or trade at a discount for a long time. So I think that's the most obvious effect, that the Western market is cut off for Chinese assets, or a very steep discount in the foreseeable future. And I don't see that is going to change short term, because Chinese authorities do not act on a whim. So if they're doing this, it's part of a plan and it's part they're going to stick to. They're also not known not to blink. So I think until there's a change, fundamental change, probably in leadership, and that happens typically when the general secretary of the party dies or is replaced, this could change. So I think this is a sustained plan that will have impact both in the West and in China in the foreseeable future. And we'll see more of it.
So this has happened before. I forget the year. There was crackdown a few years ago. And this time they said it's 6-month effort that they are going through this. We'll see how it lasts. So how long it lasts and how that changes things. But in your view, the companies like Alibaba, Tencent, et cetera, you know, the valuations kind of halved almost or got much lower.
30% or whatever.
So you think they will just stay there now? They cannot go back up or grow at the same pace because of the regulations?
Well, I don't know their growth rate. I think it will be harder for them to grow outside of China. And I think their capital markets outside of China are either cut off or is at a steep discount. But it's kind of like, you know, if you hit somebody over the head hard, right? Mm-hmm. And then you continue to do it, even if you do that for only 6 months, right? Mm-hmm. It's hard to trust that you're not going to be hit again. And building up trust when the authorities are the same is going to take a much longer time.
But what is their other option?
Well, the option is that if you invest in Chinese assets, that you do it at the discount simply because you can't trust the value of what you're investing in.
Okay. So when, you know, but we have seen a lot of innovation come out of China, like Pinduoduo. It's, I think, brilliant idea. And Alipay, WeChat, we covered some of that in Ant Financial. The whole, you know, the kind of robotic stores Alibaba is building. So, I'm fascinated with the new stuff that's coming out of there much faster than what it's coming out of the US tech giants. So you think this will slow it down because of the new regulation?
I don't think that's the main effect. I think because say you're an entrepreneur in China, right? Mm-hmm. And you have capabilities to innovate and capabilities to make money. Mm-hmm. I think people inside China are still aggressive and want to make money, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't think that the fundamental engine of innovation in China has been destroyed, but being that entrepreneur, you might be more careful. There are specific risks you will choose not to take, and so it will reduce innovation in some areas because of this, and you might end up making $5 billion instead of 10 because of that, and that's not necessarily a bad outcome in being an entrepreneur in China, but you will avoid certain ways of operating and certain opportunities because of the consequence of it. And also, I think it will attract much less investment from the West, simply because the assets are just more risky, and the paths to liquidity and returns are much more risky.
Yeah, so it's, but if all the capital is Chinese, then it doesn't matter. You're talking about a foreign investor.
And I agree. Yes, absolutely. But the question is, of course, how far will the authorities ultimately take this? Is this a drive to nationalize the whole economy, or are they happy to sort of drive it back to, you know, situation 10 years ago or whatever? I think that remains to be seen.
The whole, like, China's rise has happened because of global trade. So I don't see them, like, when you said nationalize these things, you don't mean they will stop trading with the world.
No. I'm not saying that China will not sell products to the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. So Chinese companies are perfectly happy to take Western money as customers. Mm-hmm. And I think they're happy to take Western money as investors. I just don't think that the government is happy to pay returns to those investors. And secondarily, nationalization is more about, is the Chinese government happy over time to let private Chinese individuals become rich and have ownership? Or is the long-term plan here that the government or the party owns everything? I think that's the big question. And if they go the full shebang on nationalization of ownership, that will truly drive back innovation. But I don't, you know, I think there's a long way before we're there. I'm just saying, who knows where it stops?
Yeah, I highly doubt they will nationalize companies like Tencent or Alibaba.
Well, there's a first step with this Weibo company.
Mm-hmm. I didn't, you know, read up on that, but that may be Twitter-like thing where they don't want the platform that can say anything against the party to be in private hands. I study, as you know, philosophy, and two basic ingredients you need for the populace to follow you are bread and circus. So Tencent provides great circus to people, and Alibaba basically, you know, behind the scene operates this commerce engine. So that provides bread to a lot of people. And then both of them are in payments. So taking away that bread and, or like, not taking away, but nationalizing that bread and circus, or lowering their growth prospects, or, you know, as you say, neutering them, it's not really in their best interest. And their interest being control.
Well, I think there will be plenty of bread and plenty of circus. I think the key question is who will own. I think who controls it is clear now. Who will own it is the interesting question that I think remains unresolved. And full nationalization sounds drastic and possibly unlikely. But I think that just remains to be seen. China is not shying away from globalization in terms of taking over assets in other countries, and also perfectly willing to export and so forth. I think the bigger question is, of course, given the control over data, will consumers or governments in the West or in other countries be comfortable in Chinese companies providing information or communication services in those countries? And we've already seen that, you know, Huawei is not welcome to provide communications infrastructure in the US, for example. But will there be a more siloed world where, you know, WeChat works in China and nowhere else, and, you know, Facebook, Twitter, and others have the rest of the world? So in, like, information system or in communication system, it becomes a more siloed world as an effect of this.
Well, it already is that way.
It's siloed one way, but TikTok is a Chinese company. WeChat is a Tencent asset in a Chinese company that's widely used outside of China.
Mm-hmm. But it's mainly, you know, Chinese people outside China using. There may be, I think, Alibaba, etc., have users in Asia. But WeChat, like in the US, mainly Chinese people use it. So there is already this, you know, I wouldn't say silo, but different markets for these different products. Just that's how just things evolved. And China had that policy. They wanted to create their own Google and Twitters and Facebooks, etc., which from the governance point of view, I don't find anything wrong with that. But the US did the same thing. Like, we were kicking TikTok out, like, for concern of data of US citizens. And now, you know, China is doing similar things or trying to do similar things. So it's like, we don't, like, what are the advantages of having one platform? I think it's good if we have multiple platforms.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think choice is always great. Mm-hmm. But choice doesn't always have to follow borders. And today, there are clearly more Western people on TikTok than there are Chinese people on Facebook. And likewise with WeChat. I'm on WeChat, for example, even if I don't see myself as Chinese population abroad.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's the harm in that? Like, some people are on one, some are another.
No, but there might be a crackdown where a bigger crackdown or bigger selection by consumers in saying, you know, I belong to this silo, or you can only belong to this silo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting how things evolve, but I am more bullish. I think this is temporary. I actually invested in Alibaba and Tencent when things went down. So we'll see what happens. Because they are fundamentally, you know, good businesses. You look at their PE, it's, you know, they're trading better PE than Google, Facebook, etc. And then I think they have higher growth prospects because they're super apps or they're multiple things. So I see higher, but your concern as well, none of that may happen now.
Well, I actually happen to think, I'm not fundamentally anti-Chinese, and I quite like a number of the companies. I think TikTok is a fantastic company. Mm-hmm. I think Tencent is a fantastic company, and actually, if you want to be you know, index investing in the world's game video game industry, mm-hmm. Tencent is that asset that can give you that exposure because they're essentially in all the main gaming companies in the world, and Alibaba is a fantastic e-commerce company, and they are definitely trading at a discount. The question is whether you ever will be allowed to have return on that investment, even if the price is low relative to fundamentals of the companies.
Well, the only risk is if they get delisted here in the US. I don't know what happens. They just give you, sell your shares, give you back the cash you had at the time. But other than that, I can, you know, sell the shares anytime I want. So I can get the money out.
Well, the Chinese government could say, you know, Tencent, you're out of business unless you delist, mm-hmm. and that will make the price fall even more before delisting. There's no guaranteed return on a delisting.
Yeah, I mean, there is no guaranteed return outside of FDIC insured account, but the here. Do you know this? Like, what happens? Let's say currently it's trading at 100 and they're told to delist, or US may decide that they have to delist. Then
Luckin Coffee, which is a Chinese fraudulent coffee company, had listed on the Nasdaq and was forced by Nasdaq to delist because of their fraudulent trading, for example.
And in that case, as an investor, they sell your shares at market price and give it back to you, or what happens to the owners, or you lose all of it?
Well, I don't know. I think the unwinding is difficult. I think one way is that you end up with owning illiquid, non-listed shares, although I think that would also be a breach of SEC rules. Another is that, you know, essentially there has to be a buyer, and the buyer is probably some sort of private equity, probably a Chinese private equity or a state fund, right? But essentially, it's the market price. Essentially, whoever can blackmail a company can essentially drive the price to zero.
But what do they gain from that? And that will, a lot of Chinese people will lose money if they do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I don't.
But then again, Chinese people own shares.
Mm-hmm.
Western investors own ADRs.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. There has to be. But any sale of a share is at market price.
Mm-hmm.
And the worst conditions, there are the lower the prices.
So when you have ADRs, how, let's say I have 10 ADRs of Tencent, where is that in the number of shares? That doesn't count towards number of shares, or how is that a security?
I have not looked into those, but I would assume that there's some sort of holding structure that can trade in both countries that own an equal number of shares to the ADRs.
Ah, okay. So it is a security, and they can't just ADR people get screwed, and the actual shareholders in the home country, they don't.
I would assume, but I have not studied the details of this.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it all depends on your perspective. I see that, of course there are control issues, but I see them taking a lead in protecting the users, which we are behind in the let's say Western world, or US and Europe. And if this is long term, or now the tech there will be permanently suppressed, which is possible, but I feel it's temporary, because they want economic growth. They don't want to just kill the goose that's laying eggs, golden eggs.
Yeah, I think also there's no interest in killing the goose. That said, I think shooting a company 2 days after the IPO is not consumer protection.
Well, that's investor, screwing the investor. Well, you're right. Some of them bought in retail, so they are consumers.
No, but delisting a very popular app from the App Store is not consumer protection.
Yeah. Yeah, but
there are big other forces at play here. There's no question about it.
Yeah, it's if they were doing it temporarily so that they protect the data, don't sell the data, don't misuse the data, then I can see a point, and that sends a message to the rest of the apps. But if it's just for you IPO'd at the wrong time, this is your punishment, then it's bad. But
well, look at the timing. That's not a coincidence. No way.
But you saw they did, and 2 days before the IPO.
Exactly.
But that who knows how long it takes, approvals, etc. Maybe they do things at the last minute, like I do. But we'll see. I mean, in general, I find this interesting space, how geopolitics is affecting the tech companies and the regulation and consumers, investor, flow of capital across borders. It's like, I can't read enough about it.
It's definitely an interesting space.
Yeah. So shall we end here? How did you like the box-free discussion? You went in 10 different directions and came out with no clear conclusion.
I actually didn't feel this was very box-free. I just felt it was a big box.
That's good, Arne. Let's find more big boxes.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
See you then. Bye-bye.
Bye.